My next guest could be introduced in many, many ways. She once reigned supreme as a queen of daytime TV, but has since become a best-selling author. In an interesting new departure, she's going to take place to the stage in Calendar Girls, the musical written by none other than Gary Barlow. Her name is Fern Britton, and she's on the line. Fern Britton, good morning to you. You're very, very welcome.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Well, that's good. I have to say, I laughed myself silly, but an odd tear as well during the movie of Calendar Girls. How is it going to be transformed? Well, there's six brave women going to go on the stage and take off their clothes. But you don't have to.
No, I don't have to. The movie was written by a man called Tim Firth, and Tim then wrote the play, and because he sort of grew up in the village next door to Gary Barlow, or as you sweetly nearly said, Barry Garlow, which is what we call him as well.
Right, okay.
that's okay. He decided to get Gary to write some music for it too. So the film was one side of the story, then he rewrote the play and there was a bit more in it, and now the musical version, we've got children and we've got husbands, and this is altogether a better kind of more fulsome story, if you like.
Right, okay.
And I'm the woman who doesn't have to take her clothes off. What a relief for the audience.
Perhaps also for relief for you.
Well, yeah, but I didn't even think about it. When they offered me the show, all I said was, no, thank you, I wouldn't cast me. And then the next week they rang again, well, no, thank you, I really am not the person you're looking for. And then you get an email going, well, Gary wants to have a cup of tea with you. And then suddenly you find yourself in a room doing an audition accidentally, and I got the job. But anyway, my woman, she's the head of the WI, and she does not want these girls to do this nude calendar, and she does everything she can to stop it, and she's most unpleasant, actually. Bit of a damaged control freak, very lonely, desperate to make friends with these women, and they really know that I'm an idiot. And that's it. And it's fun. It's just fun. It's been great, and we're playing to really good houses, and everyone seems to be loving it, and we are really looking forward to coming to Dublin next weekend.
That's right. I, looking back over your own biog, I mean, you've had a terrific career. You've had your ups and downs. You have had all sorts of difficulties, but you've had great successes and awards to the left and the right. But one of the things that strikes one, after 30 years, I think you were on telly,
is
the amount, how free people feel to criticise your physique, you know. I mean, in a way that, and I'm not sounding paranoid here, because I'm not, in a way that they would never do with the male.
Well, and that's interesting, Marion, because it has changed. And I started in television in 1980, so next year is my 40th year, which is mad, considering I'm obviously only 35.
Right.
61. And I, in 1980, I was hired because they liked what I was doing. No one was scrutinising how I looked or how I did my hair. I think one of the first bosses did say to me, I don't think you should wear anything without sleeves because you've got footballer's shoulders. And I was very, very skinny at that stage.
Yeah.
Well, it gave me a slight paranoia about my arms, of course. But apart from that, people just were happy that I could do the job and do it well. And if there was anything happening between the viewer and me, hopefully there was a warmth. And I'm sure you find that on your show, Marion. Mm-hmm. You know your audience. You know who you're talking to. And the response back, you think, oh, great, we understand each other. So I think if there was any talent I had, it was that. But then suddenly in the 90s and the noughties, you find yourself gradually being entered into a competition you didn't enter. And that's really weird. And then you have to start playing by the rules. But what rules? And I never did really conform to the rules. The reason I lost weight was because I was nearly 50. I wanted to run around with my kids because my smallest one, I had her when I was 44.
Yeah.
I wanted to be healthy. I wanted to, you know, all of those things. I wanted to be alive for my kids. And so I, we may as well just say it, I had this gastric band, which I never thought was going to be as successful as it was. I felt no compunction to ring up the papers and tell them, why would you? You know, if you say to anyone, oh, well, I'm on a bit of a diet, as you walk past them with your lunch tray, they'll go, oh, you won't get fat on that, or, oh, you're being naughty. I don't want anyone to discuss what I'm eating. I don't discuss it with other people. So it worked really well for me, and I didn't realise how well it would. And over 2 years, quite slowly, the weight went away. And then, of course, I was accused of selling a diet, selling a fitness video, or under lying that I had just exercised and eaten sensibly. Well, find the fitness video before any of this, and there certainly hasn't been any other after. Right. Oh, sorry.
Was there some grounds in the sense that you became the face of, if you'll pardon the term, of Rivita, or the voice of? And that there was an association in the public's mind that if you were losing weight, that it was because of Rivita.
Yes, but I can see that now, obviously. I mean, at the time, the Rivita adverts were taking the mickey out of me being big, which was great. And they were very, 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 very supportive, actually. But there is no diet that I said I'm eating Rivita. There was nothing like that. Now, I can see that there's a fudge and a complication there, obviously, in retrospect. But I had truly no idea how well that operation would work for me. It doesn't work for everybody. And it was great. And for
me, it did the job for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
With the kind of prevalence now of social media and tweeting and twittering and all of that, do you feel or not that you get a tougher time, say, than somebody else might get
On social media?
Yeah.
No. I don't get anything horrible on social media. In fact, the only people that were horrible were the press. I got so many fantastic letters. I mean, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds. None of them were negative. And from lovely colleagues and friends, but mostly from viewers.
Right.
So, no, I haven't had any
crap at all. Yeah, because so many people have problems with weight. You know, it's nice to see somebody succeeding.
The other thing is, I think people think that the operation is in itself a success, but it isn't. It's really hard, and it's very hard to eat well and properly without, I won't go into it on air, but you can get really difficult problems with it, and you have to exercise, and you have to do it all properly.
Right.
And I did my best, and, and I'm now, you know, I can cycle 60, 70 miles a day. I'm running, I'm swimming, I just feel better.
Well, that's fantastic. And I mean, I think it's regrettable that the press did go after you, so to speak, on that.
Oh, it was appalling. For 2 years, I had to have a police escort to get my children to school. The photographers are all outside, desperate, and they were tapping into my phone. The police told me that I was part of that investigation. But to be honest, I didn't want to take it up because at the time, the Millie Dowler story was so huge. Me just moaning about a couple of photographers every day following me, it was nothing. You know, you have to put things in perspective. But for my kids, that was tough.
I would think so.
Would that happen to a man?
I'm trying to think, it possibly would if he were a very famous man. But I mean...
What about the guys who have their hair transplants?
What about
them? Well, exactly. No one's going, well, you were bald and now you've had a hair transplant.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I believe there was some fuss about Wayne Rooney, but I loads of people have hair transplants.
Why would you? Rob Brydon.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, and what, no, I'm not saying they should even be noticed, but it's interesting that it's women. Have you had your breasts done? Have you had your lips done? Have you had your nose done? Beauty, as we know, is not on the outside, and we are fixated with beauty on the outside. The beauty is the thing that leaks out from the inside without you even knowing.
Right. Very well said. Very well said. For all, indeed, male, female, young and old. Now, the other thing, I mean, there are so many interesting aspects of your own life, how gardening saved you from depression, but how you had a terrifying battle with sepsis. And the reason I'm raising that with you is there is a campaign going on here to raise awareness about sepsis.
In the UK too, yeah.
Yeah. What happened in your own case?
Yeah, that was a bit grim. It was just over 2 years ago, and I... God, I'm telling you everything, Maren.
Why not?
I had to... Yeah, I don't care. I really don't care much about things anymore, but I had to have a hysterectomy because I had very unpleasant and painful fibroids, and so had to have them out.
Right.
So the whole thing happened. The operation was a success. I was only in hospital for 2 nights, I think. I got home. Now you must rest for 8 weeks, whatever it is. And within a couple of... Well, that night I was home, I was in tremendous pain in my tummy. And it built and built over the next 3 or 4 days. I can't quite remember now because I was obviously getting iller and iller but didn't know. But this tremendous pain, then being sick, and then, I mean, finally, I did get to hospital. And I knew I was dying. And that's one of the symptoms that you actually think, this is it, I'm dying. I didn't like to tell my husband, but I thought, gore, I thought I'd be seeing a bit more of life than this.
Yeah.
And then
must be very scary.
It wasn't at all. I was very calm. It's a great calmness. And just like, okay, this is it, what a shame. And I got into resus in hospital, and suddenly I was being plugged into all sorts of blood tests and drips and God knows what. And then I was operated on again the following day. So I'd had two operations in like 5 days. And they managed to drain the huge abscesses which had all grown in my stomach. What I had was E. coli poisoning. And whether it was from the original operation or whether it's on your skin or whether... But anyway, anyone who has had a cut, a bite, an operation, some kind of insult where, you know, blood, something could have got... And you start to feel very unwell, hot, not weeing enough in a day, tremendous pain, everything aching, every bone and joint aching. You have to go to the doctor, if you can get out of bed, and say, is this sepsis? Could this be sepsis? And then that puts the alarm on. I did go to see, unfortunately, there was a doctor I didn't usually see at my surgery when I was feeling ill and needed to go to hospital. And I rang and said, I'm really feeling very unwell. And she said, well, you must come to the surgery. And I said, no, I really can't. And she said, oh, it's your gastric band, is it? And I said, well, hang on a minute, that was 10 years ago. And also... can you not see? I've just had a hysterectomy. Oh, well, you won't be able to come out. And I'm not ordering an ambulance. Anyway.
Oh, helpful is
but
this?
But a year later, I went back to her and made an appointment to go and see her. And I said to her, why didn't you believe me? Why did you say all that stuff? And she said, well, you see, you have to understand, I'm very anxious and you were famous. I'm sorry. So obviously I'm not going back to that place. But you have to, I mean, a doctor, I said to her, did you have any training in sepsis? Oh, yes, we did a mornings workshop. I said, okay, so now tell me, what does sepsis stand for? You know, S-E-P-S-I-S.
Yeah.
To be honest, Marion, I can't remember myself for a minute. But anyway.
Yeah.
She went, so... Sepsis is huge and it's important and you must not wait.
Yeah,
too long.
There was a very famous case here, tragic case, where a woman died from sepsis in the course of a bad birth, and she and the baby, and all, utterly tragic. But actually, what killed her was the sepsis. Now, how long did it take you to recover from that? And how did you recover from that?
It took me almost 2 years because it invades every cell of your body and every joint and your skin, your face, your hair, your insides. Everything was painful for a couple of years. I had to sleep every day for, I mean, I'd just jump into bed and sleep for 3 hours during the day and was very tired. I wasn't sure I could make this tour, actually. But the doctors kept saying, you must exercise your way out of this, even though exercising made me cry and was exhausting and made me feel worse. It actually did make me feel better in the end.
Really?
Amazing.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, just moving your joints. My joints hurt a lot now. I still, my knees and my wrists and my fingers are bad. But I'm better.
Well, I'm delighted to hear it. And in terms of medication, were you medicated up to the gills?
In hospital, yes. I was in hospital for a couple of weeks and I don't remember very much about it. I got pneumonia, my lungs collapsed and my liver was not looking good and, everything. And my husband and my elder daughter were just fantastic. They took it in turns to come and see me and I don't remember very much about it at all. And then after about 12 days, I suppose, my little daughter came in eating flame-grilled crisps, steak-flavoured. Right. And she was munching them, and I hadn't eaten, and she said, would you like one, Mum? And I tried it, and it was like, oh, it was manna from heaven. It was the most glorious thing. And then I started to eat, which is great. It was horrible. It's absolutely horrible. And please, 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 anybody, you must say to somebody, could this be sepsis? And the blood test and the markers in it will show you. And then, sorry, you asked about medication. Yeah.
Yes.
Thank God antibiotics worked. Thank God. And I was on a lot of heavy-duty anti-inflammatories and tramadol and everything for a long time. Yeah.
Right. Because sometimes for people, those anti-inflammatories can nearly cause other problems in terms of hitting their stomach. I'm sure your husband was very flattered that you were so taken with your daughter's crisps, given that I presume he waits on you hand and foot with magical food all the time, he being a celebrity chef.
Bless him. Phil, yeah, no, he knew that I didn't want any food and he would try to bring things in, but it just happened to be the crisps. And then he said to me, can I bring you something tomorrow? I said, yes, I would like Stilton cheese, walnuts, watercress and salad dressing. I, God only knows why I wanted that. And he brought it in the next day and it was lovely. And the other day I made it at home and he looked at me and he said, I brought that to you when you're in the hospital. And I said, oh, no. And we had a hug about a year or so afterwards. We were sitting in bed and I started to cry and I said, I nearly lost you. I nearly died and lost all this. And he put his arm around me and went, I know. So, thank goodness.
And you met through Ready Steady Cook, isn't that correct?
Yes, he was the only one I never really noticed because I was in the middle of a very unhappy first marriage. Well, it had been very happy, but it was at the unhappy end. And so work was my salvation and I'd go to work. I wouldn't even notice which chef I was working with. I would just do it and leave. And then one day somebody said to me, Phil Vickery fancies you. And I thought, I said, which one's Phil Vickery? And they went, you know, the one who wears his whites with the sleeves rolled up. I went, oh, the one who looks like an osteopath. And they went, yeah. And my goodness, after that, I had a good look at him and I thought, oh, yes, he's nice. I mean, I was obviously separated from my husband for about a year by then. But yeah, he came into my life. That's 20 years ago.
And the food has only gone up since then.
Food is pretty damn good, yeah. Yeah,
so
yeah.
Presumably you don't cook at all.
Oh, I do. I do the family cooking.
Oh, do
but
you?
I haven't but I haven't cooked Christmas for 20 years.
God, the envy that'll be spinning around the country now.
I know.
Caller is on to say, Fern Britton was and still is a massive crush for me. She's a true English rose, says Daniel in Drumcondra.
Thank you, Daniel.
You might
an old lady feel happy.
Fern is a lady. Please tell her that her programme on the Holy Land was so special. And I wonder, was it her faith that kept her so calm facing death?
Good question. Thank you for enjoying that Holy Land programme. I loved doing that. And yeah, I think it probably was. My faith is... it's personal and strong, but I don't ram it down people's throats. And there are times, and I hope people understand this, faith is a bit like trying to tune the wireless. Sometimes it's very crystal clear, and other times it's a bit sort of coming and going. But I absolutely believe that something, someone I call God, other people call whatever, is guiding me, yeah, and has indeed looked after me and my family.
Well, that's rather wonderful. Another caller was saying, your guest is a very interesting lady. She's funny and informative, but very interesting to hear how she felt about dying.
Mm. Yeah, I'm not afraid to die. I don't think I ever was, but I'm certainly not afraid now. I didn't get white tunnels and my mother waving at the other end and all that stuff, but I just was relaxed.
Right.
I thought, right. And the specialist, he asked me about it afterwards. He said, did you feel that you were going to die? And I went, yeah. And he said, and were you very calm about it? And I said, yeah. And he said, that's absolutely one of the symptoms.
Gosh, isn't that interesting? Another caller. Hi, Mary. Delighted to hear Farn Britain. Because of her show, I went to the Holy Land and had a tattoo of a cross by the same person who had done hers. And that's a woman called Carmela. So she's obviously very happy with what she did.
Well, bless her. Well, that there's a family of tattooists who've been there since the Middle Ages, and they've all come through the generations. And yes, I'm looking at my cross on my wrist right now. I got told off for it because apparently in Leviticus you're not supposed to damage your body or something. But I think it's lovely.
There you go. Well, that's the main thing. Now, give me the dates. The Calendar Girls, the musical. Yeah. It's at the Bord Gáis Energy Theatre from...
Yeah. No, you're going to have to forgive me. I can't remember the date.
Well, I have it written here, so don't worry.
It's Tuesday... January...
The 22nd...
Tuesday the 22nd of January for 2 weeks, and we are thrilled and looking forward to coming. So I hope you, I mean, if you want to come and have a laugh and a cry and more laughing, this is the show for you.
Okay, well listen, thank you very, very much indeed.
Thank you, Marion.
For talking to you, and a lot of people saying, great to hear you highlighting sepsis and with such a very friendly and down-to-earth guest. Well done to her. So on that note, may I say a very good day to you, and we will take a break.
Podcast The Marion Finucane Show at rte.ie/radio.